to Language of God and to a special Lent reflection series where we're reading selected pieces from Wild Hope, Stories for Lent from the Vanishing by Gail Boss. I'm Colin Hugerwerf, the producer of the show. Wild Hope is a book of stories about wild creatures that are imperiled. Before we get to the reading, let's hear briefly from the author, Gail Boss.
As I was imagining a book about the peril of extinction for animals, what better time for us to let in that suffering of creatures on the brink of extinction and allow, can we allow, by hearing these stories, the hard husk surrounding our hearts that we put up for protection to break open and to let in more of love and compassion, meaning God, if God is love, to let in more compassion for these creatures that are made like we are of the earth.
Check out the first reflection in the series for even a little bit more context from Gail for where the book came from. The reflections from Wild Hope are grouped into 5 different weeks, with 4 creatures in each week, throughout the season of Lent, and 4 more during Holy Week. Gail decided to group the creatures for each week by the main threat to their survival, these categories echoing Matthew 25. Insofar as you have done it to those without homes, without food, as you have visited the sick, you have done it unto the least of these, my brothers and sisters.
So many of these creatures, by writing about how they are amazing and beautiful, can't help but bring us to awe and wonder. And then if we learn about their suffering, can these stories crack open that husk and convict us of the suffering of God's beauty? I mean, isn't that what Holy Week is all about? The suffering of God's beauty. There you have it on the cross.
We're reading one of the reflections each week in Lent. We'll end with an interview with Gail Boss on the last Thursday in Lent. We'll have a different staff person read each week. Sierra Reyes-Tan has today's reading.
Week 4, The Poisoned, The Olm. Deep within the arid rock that bounds the eastern Adriatic Sea lies a dark kingdom. Though they hadn't been there, the area's human inhabitants knew of the kingdom long ago. A dragon rules it, they said, and they had proof. Going after heavy rains to the springs that gave them their drinking water, they found the dragon's babies washed up out of the deep. They quickly put the foundlings into streams, urging them to return to their mother underground, where she guarded the fresh, sweet water of their life. In the limestone mountains of Slovenia, Croatia, and Bosnia-Herzegovina, powerful rivers run through thickly forested gorges, then disappear, swallowed whole by the earth. Unseen, they snake through the porous rock, carving canyons, grottos, and caverns, pooling in lakes, plunging over cliffs, twisting, sinking, rising. Relentlessly, the rivers push to new subterranean levels, leaving behind hollow labyrinths, some narrow as an arm, some vast as cathedrals, all dark as a grave. Hidden from the world above, a pale creature lies still in the pools and lakes of these lightless caves. Its foot-long body, a slender cylinder, glows faintly pink, blood-filled capillaries tinting its thin, pigmentless skin. Pinker still are its external gills, frilly little tufts, colored with the blood pulsing through their transparency. They sprout at the back of a head shaped like a minuscule crocodile's. Add legs so tiny they seem fetal and a tadpole-like tail, and it's easy to see why people once called these creatures baby dragons. The Olm is in fact Earth's largest cave-dwelling animal, a salamander. It's unlike any other amphibian on the planet. Not only has it adapted to life in underground caves, but to life entirely underwater in underground caves, a double darkness. In this world apart, the Olm lived tranquilly for 100 million years. Except for heavy rains that washed a few away from home, humans might never have known of its existence. What humans do know of the Olm has largely come from aquarium labs set up in three large caves, because the entrances to nearly all its home caves are too small, too deep, too labyrinthine for researchers to reach. In the aquaria, captivated scientists ask this adaptive genius its secrets. Left undisturbed, it rests in a near-death stillness. Shine a light, and it swims eel-like away. Not because it has seen the light. Eyes the ulm is born with sink beneath its skin, sight proving useless for life in utter darkness. It swims away because its skin senses light, and it's an alien sensation. Settled again, it puts other, more than human senses to work. With no visual cues for up or down or any direction, the ulm tunes receptors in its head to signals from Earth's magnetic field. Once oriented, its inner ear picks up not only sound waves in the water, but also in the ground. If it hears a slight displacement of water, its alerted nostrils sniff for precisely what sort of creature nears. Sensors in its snout then detect the bioelectric field that creature radiates and describe it to the waiting ulm. Always, its finely tuned senses are asking, is it edible? Cave waters deliver sporadically the tiny shrimp, crabs, and snails that ulms eat. Not knowing when its next meal will wash in, an ulm hoards its energy stores. It slows metabolism. Unless threatened, it moves slowly, if at all. In such slowed motion, an ulm, deprived of food, can survive for a decade. Yes, a decade. Neither is the creature in a rush to grow up. Its body takes 14 full years to develop sexual organs, and even when adult, holds onto parts of its larva body, like puny legs and external gills. It breeds maybe once every 7 years, and though it weighs less than an ounce, an ulm lives longer than an elephant, some as long as a century. While fascinating, watching ulms in aquaria doesn't tell researchers how they're doing at home. An intrepid few in wetsuits strap on oxygen tanks to enter that other kingdom. Carefully roping themselves to the sunlit world, they lower themselves deep into cracks in the earth. They swim through passages no wider than their bodies and dive 200-300 feet into liquid darkness, lit only by a headlamp's beam. Dozens of scientists have been to outer space, only a handful to the heart of the ulm universe. And in this remoteness, they find human waste, waters that for millions of years have streamed and percolated through porous bedrock, shaping a world of fantastical caves, now pass first through mounds of factory waste, mining sludge, poorly treated sewage, garbage dumps, and fields sprayed with pesticides. The toxins in all of it, the divers find far beneath the surface in cave waters and in the delicate pink tissues of ulms. Some populations have disappeared. All are imperiled. Nearly 1 million tourists each year stare at the wonders of Slovenia's massive Postojna cave, including ulms in an aquarium. They crowded close in 2016 when, in public view, a female ulm laid eggs that hatched 21 baby ulms. Few scientists and no ordinary citizens had before witnessed the laying or the hatching. News outlets around the world buzzed. Researchers fed the attention, hoping to transform popular dragon fantasies into real-life ulm awe, hoping awe would become fervor to protect ulm waters, which are human waters, inhabitants of the land that are the Eastern Adriatic Sea, still get their drinking water from underground streams. If the mother waters are poisoned, it is not only her baby dragons that will be poisoned. As people long ago knew, what befalls the dragon befalls all those who rely on her.
Thanks to Paraclete Press, who gave permission to use excerpts from Wild Hope. Wild Hope is by Gail Boss, with beautiful illustrations by David G. Klein. Find out more about the book in the link to the show notes. Language of God is produced by BioLogos. It has been funded in part by the Fetzer Institute, the John Templeton Foundation, and by individual donors and listeners who contribute to BioLogos. Language of God is produced and mixed by Colin Hugerwerf. That's me. Our theme song is by Breakmaster Cylinder. BioLogos offices are located in Grand Rapids, Michigan, in the Grand River watershed. If you have questions or want to join in a conversation about this episode, find a link in the show notes for the BioLogos Forum, or visit the website, biologos.org, where you'll find articles, videos, and other resources on faith and science. Thanks for listening.